All right, it's the third week of April, and here we are in Bloomington with Mayor John Hamilton. Good to see you again. Thanks for having us.
Nice to see you, Joe. Welcome back to City Hall.
Yeah, I just had a start. I know it's not Bloomington news, but it's Indiana news. It's what everyone's talking about. South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, his announcement for president. No one's surprised, maybe unless you're outside of Indiana. Is this the right time for Buttigieg to make the announcement, and why now?
Well, Mayor Pete is a good friend, and he's a terrifically talented guy, and I'm very excited for him and for South Bend and for our state and for our party, frankly, for me. I was not there in person when he did his formal announcement, but I did actually help host a watch party, and we had, 80 or 90 people who crammed in to watch the announcement.
So why not run for governor or something a little bit more? It kind of seems to be the common theme that I'm hearing. Do you think he's ready for this endeavor?
I do. I think Pete views this as not something he planned 2 or 3 years ago. I think the changes in the country, the sense of, I think he would say, almost from his perspective, the need for a shift in an era. To, as he would put it, a new generation and a new focus on many of the issues that he looks at today's Washington, D.C., from the presidency through Congress, as kind of a symptom of what's going on, not the cause. And I think he wants to bring a new message that says we've really got to change course.
I read a report where pay spikes are leaving Bloomington, mm-hmm. So I guess the scooters have been blamed as what this town isn't big enough for the two of us. So I guess could you give us a little bit of a background on what's happening there with the pay spikes, and then just your thoughts on
sure.
how, again, this, we talk about it almost every month, I feel, how the landscape is changing in terms of transportation in cities.
It's like showdown at the Kirkwood Corral or something, I guess, between these. Look, the bikes are disruptive technology. They came in, they've been around for a decade or more, the shared bike systems, and they've been useful and attractive, and I rode them, I liked them. The company wanted to come to town, we said, great, let's do it. But then the scooters arrived, and I think the customers, if you will, have kind of spoken with their feet, at least so far, to suggest they find scooters more convenient than bicycles. Now, I don't think we're done with this yet. I think the transition and the change are going to keep coming. Meeting with one of the scooter companies, their view is the combination of scooters and electric bikes, not so much just the pedal bikes, but scooters and electric bikes and maybe shared vehicles are going to be a trio that may show up over time. But we don't know. We're going to see hoverboards and new who knows what else coming. But it was definitely that bicycle company wasn't ready to bring scooters themselves, for example, to integrate. So it looks like they couldn't make it work here. So we'll see what happens over the next year or two.
And this was a joint agreement with IU on this and with Zagster?
Yes, Zagster Pace, same company.
Thing,
We did an RFQ to companies to say who wants to come provide it. They did it at their own expense. We approved them, if you will, different from scooters where we didn't do an RFQ. They just came on their own. Ironically, Lime, who is now a scooter, was one of the bike companies that wanted to come here. And it'll be interesting whether any of the existing scooter companies bring electric bikes or other things with them. So it's all transitioning.
Are there any specific out clauses for Zagster to be able to leave Bloomington, or do they have to stay to a certain time?
I think we agreed with them that they're staying through basically the campus period through mid-May or so to make sure they're here during the end of the year for the school. Summer gets slower because of so many fewer students here anyway. And I think that's when they're going to depart.
So now we're focusing on scooters. I was a little surprised, I don't know about you, but some of the lack of attendance at the last city council meeting where the scooter ordinance was up for debate. And I guess some of us were expecting maybe a kind of a packed house because scooters have just had such an impact on Bloomington. But it seemed like that the meeting kind of went okay.
Well, I think it's a good, we've always said we want the ordinance to come along. We did the negotiations with the companies to get the letter agreements with them, which were good. And then the ordinance is in front of folks. Sometimes council meetings aren't the most convenient thing to do and people don't want to show up. I mean, you know, this is all part of the mobility options that I think we want to see them done right. But the idea that we want to create more and more options from people separate from a single rider car is a good thing, from transit to shared bikes to sidewalks to bicycles you own to scooters and other things, all to create the dynamic that says there are a lot of different ways to get around town.
So there were a lot of different items. We won't get into all of them. There's licensing, operations, parking, all these issues that residents have been able to give input in. One is interesting too, and it's data sharing. Can you explain a little bit about what that means?
Well, yeah, there's a couple things. One is I do think it's important to remember in all this, because I heard some of the debate. I wasn't there that night, but concern about bicyclists on the sidewalk when we don't want them on the downtown sidewalk, and same with scooters. We want to pay attention to that, and we want to protect public safety, but we also want to encourage these mobility options. It is a good thing when people are not in a car moving around our community, riding the bus, walking, biking, scootering, all those creating a more dynamic option of micro-mobility, as we call it. So that's a good thing. In terms of the data sharing, it'll be very helpful for us to know who's riding scooters from where to where, what times of day are the busiest, if we have any incidents, where do they happen, all of which will help us manage this very dynamic situation.
Now, I heard last time that you were looking into a new budget line, participatory budget for the youth, mm-hmm. where local youth, I guess, get to kind of spend what they think is best for the city. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came to be and where that money is coming from?
Yeah, sure. I'm very excited about this. I actually learned about this at some mayor's conferences where I learned some other cities around the country are pulling in young people. It's also done sometimes by district, but our council didn't want to do that. So we're doing it by young people, which I think is really good. It encourages the youth to get involved in helping decide where a small part of the city budget goes. $15,000 was set aside in our $100 million or so city budget to say, let's put it in this little pot and let's ask 14 to 18-year-olds or so, I think, junior high and senior high students, what would be most important to you in this city? And reach out to your peers. So there's an oversight group that's running it, and then they're going to reach out to their peers. And the evidence suggests from other communities a couple things. One, it gets students and young people really involved, just involved in their government. It helps make sure they vote. They get encouraged to think about civic participation, which is so important. You know, the younger generation doesn't vote as much as the older. And so I'm very excited. We've got a really energetic, creative group of teenagers who are meeting and plotting how they want to do this. And hopefully we'll get some good projects and we'll go back to City Council and say, let's do it again for 2020.
And so is that just money that comes from the general budget?
Just comes from the general fund, otherwise.
Do you know how much that is?
It's $15,000 this year. And so, you might spend it on one or two or three different projects, but it means the young people get personally involved, they think about what they want, they run the projects, and then they get done, and then they rinse and repeat, try it again, see what happens.
Is there like a group of people kind of overseeing that?
There is a group of about 10 or 12 teenagers who are in charge of this, who are going to run the program. We've gotten some info from Boston, has done this very successfully, and there are some other cities, and they're kind of taking some of the protocols from that. But they're going to run it, and they're going to reach out to as many of their peers as they can to get ideas and vet the ideas and then vote on them.
I wanted to see if you had an update we talked about this last month on the legislation that cities can't charge landlords an inspection fee of more than $5 per unit. We talked about how Bloomington and West Lafayette was exempt and now they're not. You were looking into, or the city was looking into, whether or not that applied for what Bloomington does in that area. Did you learn anything more on?
So that was a court decision that made right. that, and we don't okay. know, have any more clarity on that. We continue to believe very strongly that our inspection program is very important for safety and the health of our community overall, and so we do intend to try to keep doing that. We just haven't finally figured out all the nuances of that.
Let's move on to, it's been about a month now since the annexation hearing. Do you know any updates that maybe we don't so far, or are we just waiting like you are on Judge Nardi?
I don't get any phone calls from Judge Nardi. We're just waiting like everybody else to see when he comes out with his decision. I don't think it will be too long, probably, but we're just waiting like everybody else to see when that decision comes out.
Did anything come out of that hearing? Because that happened the week after we last talked. So did anything come out of that was new to you or that
I thought our case was exceptionally strong, Joe. When I actually did choose to sit through the hearing and hear the arguments, and I thought, you know, the city's case is, look, you're it's illegal under the Constitution to treat a city or one place with special legislation that doesn't apply to anybody else, and that's pretty clearly what happened, and there's no good reason for it. There was no exceptional nature to our annexation effort, and it seemed to me the government's protestations to the opposite, the state government, didn't, in my view, demonstrate that there was anything special about our annexation. So I hope the judge reaches the conclusion that we think is right, which is to say that was an unconstitutional act by the legislature and the governor.
Now I have to give you the other side to that would say, too much too soon, I read not enough time, gerrymandering areas. Do you?
Well, there's a state prescribed length of time that you cannot be shorter than or longer than in annexation. We were in that block of state defined time. So I don't know how you say it was too fast or too slow. It was exactly the what the legislature required. In terms of too much, there have been bigger annexations in the state. We were in the middle of the process to do the annexation. It was shrinking as the boundaries were being changed. So I think the idea that was unique about Bloomington is really a not very strong argument. I hope the judge agrees with us. We'll find out.
Some people are concerned this is costing the city a lot of money. Hmm. Is this lawsuit costing the city a lot of money?
No, it is not. That's a canard that people are putting out there. Now, I will say annexation is not cheap. The state government, again, these same rules that they set out require that we do a lot of fiscal analysis, a lot of legal analysis, a lot of legal mailings to people, which we did, and spent about $700,000, give or take, on that process. That was what we spent to do the annexation, that then when the state put the guillotine down on us, we didn't spend any more money, and the actual litigation is being done by our own lawyers who were actually really wanted to volunteer to do this on their time, adding it to their burden. Now, it takes some time from our city lawyers, but they're covering everything else. We haven't had to outsource any of the costs, so it's really not costing anything.
And then just one more question on this. So how will the city, because we assume this might, like you said, this decision could come any time. It's going to be one way or the other, we assume. How will the city proceed if they side with the city or if they side with the state?
Well, if they side with the city, which we hope they will, but of course we don't know, if they side with the city, we don't know, the state can choose to take that straight to the Indiana Supreme Court. They can skip right up to the Supreme Court because it would mean a trial court determined a law was unconstitutional, an action was unconstitutional. If we were to lose, if the state were to prevail, then we would have to appeal through the intermediate court first and then to the Supreme Court. We just haven't crossed that bridge yet. We'll look at it if and when it happens, but I hope that if the court finds for us that the state would back off and recognize that that's the right decision. Now, you know, we don't know what will come out, but we'll see when it comes.
Would the city move forward with more?
Well, we'll have to look at, it depends on what the order says, how it would be handled. I still regret, I think if the process had been allowed to run its course, we were only halfway through a 5-month process, we would be well underway by now with a decision about what the boundaries of the city should be, and we'd be doing the planning for increased fire protection, increased police protection, parks, streets, all those things that we would be underway. And it's very unfortunate that got stopped in the middle of its tracks by an inappropriate state action.
Convention Center public forums continue this week. Now the planning process is getting to design and placement aspects of the project, and there's a public forum on Wednesday night that's open to everybody, and this is the time for people to get their more specific input on the Convention Center.
I do encourage people to go by the Convention Center. There are several specific times, including Wednesday night, I think at 5:30, and then Thursday afternoon, the 18th at 2 p.m. are two particular times, but actually any time during the next couple days, people can drop in the Convention Center for open meetings. The architects are there, there's a model of the area, and they're going to be playing with blocks and looking at ideas and pinning things up on the wall, and It's a really good time for people to go and give feedback or see what's happening.
So they're taking all the input that they received a month ago and kind of pushing it forward this week for the next level of planning for the project. Is that what
Yes, this is they all are. For? And they're actually, you know, moving blocks. They're looking at the region, the area, and then they're looking at the actual site. And by the way, there's a new block that's available because the Redevelopment Commission just signed a purchase agreement to buy the block immediately north of the Convention Center between College College and 3rd Street. So just north of the Convention Center on 3rd Street is a law firm, Bunger and Robertson, has agreed to sell that property to the Redevelopment Commission. So that adds a new potential location for the Convention Center. So all those potential locations for the center expansion, a hotel, parking garage, all that will be kind of moved around as ideas from the architects. And then we hope to come back in the next week or days, months. It'll take some time to really develop the plan.
Where was that segment to get that Bunger and Robertson, what part?
The building, the block that's immediately north of the Convention Center. So west of College, east of Morton, Madison, I guess. No, east of Morton, between 3rd and 4th. Virtually that entire block. I want to thank the Bunger and Robertson folks. They really worked closely to say, we'd like to make this available, and they did so at a good price. And so that's now in the mix for the Convention Center. It would mean, if it works, and we don't know if it will, but it would mean it would kind of pull the Convention Center a little closer to downtown and over that big 3rd Street underpass.
Speaking in that area, 4th Street Garage, a big change from what we talked about
yes.
previously now to be demolished and rebuilt. But there's also talk of a real estate agent owns some land next to there that the city would like to buy to be able to expand the garage. Do you have any updates on that area too?
Well, I want to thank the city council. They revisited that decision, and it was a close vote to revisit it. We had 5 votes that said, yes, it does make sense to replace that garage rather than do a 5-year, very temporary repair, an expensive repair. And we think that's the right decision. Not an easy decision, but I wish that garage had lasted longer, but it wasn't kept up well enough over the last 35 years. So that's good. That planning is going forward. It is true that this garage is gonna be around for 50 years, and we wanna do it right. We wanna get the right thing for the community. And there is privately owned property that would let the garage reach all the way to 3rd Street, which would let us do a little lower garage and do as many parking spaces. So we're very interested in that and hope that we might be able to work something out with that landowner. And again, this is one of these public projects that there's a lot of community interest in doing this right and getting something that's going to be lasting for a couple generations. So we're working hard to get the best decisions we can out
of it. Is that what's happening right now? Just a lot of planning?
There's demolition planning, and then there's design planning, and there's a community group that's working together on that, a committee that's looking at the design, and then we'll ultimately go out for bids, to get the demolition done and the construction beginning as soon as possible.
I wanted to just get a quick take. You know, the primary election is coming up. Now you are running unopposed. Many would say part of the election cycle is brings up debate and conversation and discussions. And
indeed, it does.
As you know, and a lot of that now isn't happening. So how do you hold yourself accountable to residents without having, at least for now, an opponent to run against?
Well, the first thing I'd say is there are really important election coming up. There's a lot of city council races that are being contested, more than I'm familiar with usually. My opponent's actually still on the ballot, so technically we do have a race. Every day in my job, Joe, I think you ask any mayor, every day in your job, you're getting feedback from people about what they like and what they don't like. And a big part of my job is to reach out to the community and all different kinds of ways and different people and different styles and different views to try to explore which way we want to go forward. That's, you know, this is a city that we know, our survey showed it. We have people who care a lot about things going on in the city. So it's true the election season can intensify that, but in some ways it also kind of personalizes it too, which is, you know, a lot of what you really want to do is think about what direction do we want to go as a community, whether it's on our affordable housing issues or the buildings that we're seeing or how we serve the people who are stressed in our community. And those debates happen every day and they'll keep happening.
I used up my time, but I wanted to mention really quick that there's a street fair coming on Kirkwood Avenue in end of April. Shoot.
I'm so glad. April 28th. I'm so glad you asked. We have the second bicentennial. The first was a bicentennial. Now we're just calling it a street fair. It was so exciting last year to have thousands of people filling Kirkwood Avenue as we closed it down and had all kinds of activities. And so Sunday, April 28th from noon to 4, come on down to Kirkwood Avenue because it'll be a blast.
And if people want to hear you sing, they can do that on Thursday, where you are starring in Hamiltunes.
Not starring, Joe, let's be clear. But it is exciting, the IU Center for Rural Engagement and the Maurer School, the IU Center for Rural Engagement and Jacobs School, great talented people, are doing like a review of the musical Hamilton. And they're really good. I've heard some of them do it. I do get to do a little cameo, Hamilton on Hamilton, you know, that kind of name thing.
Yeah,
But I encourage you, down at the Buskirk at 7:30 on Thursday the 18th. Free, but get tickets.
Anything else you'd like to announce or that you'd like to say?
Just if you have a chance on Earth Day, there'll be a couple interesting things going on too. I think we're going to have another announcement on the Compressed Natural Gas Task Force, that next step on that. And then also a groundbreaking down at Switchyard Apartments next to Switchyard Park.
I saw that Monday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.